Chapter 7, Events of the First Year. During the first year, the new missionary was initiated fully into the joys and heartaches, the sufferings and blessings of missionary service in India. One day, in the sizzling heat of June, a telegram arrived which was to lead her on an adventurous journey. She was asked to go to the aid of Dr. Charlotte Wheeler, who was seriously ill with typhoid, in Thandiani, a small town in the mountains far to the north. The patient had been her fellow student in the London Medical School, although 2 years ahead of her. It was a long journey, first by train, and then being carried for 2 days. With thankfulness, she arrived safely at her destination and immediately took charge of the patient. She remained for 2 weeks, working to bring the other woman back to health, and only left when she was completely out of danger. Arrangements had been made for Dr. Brown to go back through the mountains, carried by military kehars. They set out early in the morning in order to get the advantage of a full day. They went over hills covered with snow, down into valleys, and back again on the heights. As day began to fade, the travelers realized that they had lost their way. It was most difficult to discuss the situation, as the men spoke Bihari and the doctor had only the most limited use of Urdu. It was an alarming situation. When darkness overtook them, the man began to fear an attack by wild animals. Yet they were becoming physically exhausted from their long day of walking and carrying. Miss Brown wondered whether she would have to spend the night in the open among the snows. But the men were also afraid of this responsibility upon them, so they struggled on through the night. The doctor's understanding of the stars helped to keep them on course. At last, to the great relief of everyone, they saw a light some distance away. This gave the men new courage and strength. They pushed ahead with new determination, and at 10 o'clock they arrived at a house where they received a warm welcome. The family took the doctor in for the night, and at the same time saw that the exhausted kehars were given food and a place to rest. Next morning the journey was resumed, and they reached Rawalpindi in time to catch the evening train to Ludhiana, back to the torrid, unbearable heat from the invigorating, healthy snows of the Himalayas. The weather kept getting hotter and hotter. When Dr. Brown went down to the hospital in the evenings between 6 and 7 p.m., the air seemed to have come out of a blast furnace. Her face felt scorched, as though she had been sitting for some time before a roaring fire. The unpleasantness of the hot season was not made any easier by the fact that the water was almost intolerable to drink. It was indeed good news when Miss Andrews announced that she had been able to arrange for a small supply of ice to be delivered daily. This was hauled all the way from the mountains with great difficulty, but it was a lifesaver for the missionaries. Dr. Brown decided to keep track of the amount of water and tea she drank in a 24-hour period, and was amazed to find that it worked out to be 14 glasses. Yet she felt continually thirsty. When doing an operation, she had to appoint one of the nurses to fan her and wipe her face. The hot season seemed to be a boiling cauldron in which all the unsought miseries and discomforts were brewed, to be spilled out upon the physically exhausted people. Flies, mosquitoes, locusts, prickly heat, cholera, and plague beat upon the resistance of the people, rich and poor, high and low, Indian and European. The prickly heat attacked Dr. Brown first, and for days she got little relief from it. At one point, she was nearly covered with it, especially all over her head, so that she began to look as if she were broken out with measles. It became increasingly difficult to get rest, for it seemed as though everything she leaned against or lay down on was full of pins. Then the mosquitoes began their attack with deadly precision. For a while, the doctor was disabled as a result of mosquito bites. One bite on her eyelid made it swell so much that she could not open her eye for several days. Another bite on her arm suppurated, and the arm became very swollen and painful. She had to poultice it and carry it in a sling for some time. A one-eyed, one-armed surgeon was surely working under a handicap. She wrote dramatically about some of the other difficulties they encountered with insects. Other insects are getting very numerous, too. Ants, black, which eat fruit, etc., and white, which eat wood, leather, and are very destructive. There are also crickets, wasps, hornets, and lizards. The last 2 years, there was a plague of locusts here, once in the flying stage when the sky was black with them, and they settled on the green things and devoured everything. Another time, they were in the crawling stage when they advanced just like a black river, scaling every obstacle they met and eating every green thing. They came right over the house, climbing up one side and down the other. In some places, the soldiers were sent out against them to dig immense trenches in their line of march. As the locusts fell into these, soldiers prevented them from getting out the other side till the trench was nearly full. Then they were buried. It was truly a shower of blessing when the first rain broke in July. Edith Brown had never known that rain could be so welcome. As she moved between the hospital and the house, she saw the hurried preparations for heavy rains. Along the sides of the roads, deep ditches were being dug to carry off the water. In some places, they were nearly 6 feet deep and 1 foot wide, and seemed very dangerous to be so unprotected. Children appeared to delight in playing in the shallow ones, and a number of times she noted a little brown head in just about road level. As the rain continued to fall, the landscape began to take on a new appearance. The faded, tired look disappeared, to be replaced by a freshness which bore promise of the green pleasantness not too far distant. At night, she listened to the frogs croaking loudly. It seemed as if they said, "It'll rain, it'll rain," and the minor birds called out, "Cheer up, cheer up." In the middle of August, after the rains had been coming for some time and fewer patients were coming to the hospital, it was decided that Dr. Brown and Miss Pogson should have their vacation in the Murray Hills. It was a delightful prospect for both women after going through the strain of the hot season. But on the way, they wanted to stop at Amritsar and see the work of Sarah Hewlett, which had received considerable recognition in Northwest India. Sarah Secunda Hewlett of the Church of England Zenana Missionary Society was made of the stuff from which dauntless pioneers are hewn. She had taken medical training in England, but did not go on for qualifications. She had been told that she was already well equipped for work in India. Knowing the urgent need for medical work among the women and children of India, she contented herself with her qualification of trained nurse and midwife. The two visitors were astounded by the amount of work initiated by this woman and her helpers. She operated a 30-bed hospital, a training home for girls who learned dispensing, nursing, and a little doctoring, a school for blind people who learned to read and write, as well as to make baskets and doormats. She had 3 dispensaries in different parts of the city, managed by Indian girls whom she had trained. Each girl had a Bible woman, another student, and a village dai, or midwife, to help her. Miss Hewlett or Miss Sharp, her assistant, went to each dispensary every day to check on the work. Miss Hewlett had also trained 26 village dais who reported their cases to her each day. Also, she paid at least one visit to each patient in her home to share the gospel in person. She often made as many as 15 such calls in one day. In addition, she conducted services twice a day with the student nurses and blind women, once a day with the hospital patients, and taught a Bible class each day. The travelers left Amritsar at 7 p.m. that same day, changed trains at Lahore, and then found their way blocked at Waziribad. Here a bridge had collapsed the previous night from heavy rains, and there had been a serious accident. They had to sit in the train until daylight. Then they transferred to a little trolley for the short trip to the break in the bridge. They scrambled down to a boat, which was bobbing up and down like a cork in the swollen waters, and they were rowed across the river to the other side of the broken bridge. Once again, they got into a trolley and were pushed about 1.5 miles to a spot where the rails were safe and a train was waiting. As they passed through the flooded area, they were saddened by the sights which unfolded before their eyes. Several villages had been completely destroyed. Beds and cooking vessels were floating down the river. Some people had climbed up into trees and were saved, but many lives had been lost in the raging torrent. Finally, they reached Rawalpindi several hours late and too late to go up to Muri that day. They spent the night in the dock bungalow and had an early start next morning. Now they traveled by tonga, a kind of low dog cart, which was not uncomfortable. The horses were changed every 4 or 5 miles of the 39-mile trip, according to the condition of the road. The scenery was beautiful, and in the lower range of hills, it reminded Edith Brown of Cumberland, but it lacked the beauty of the small individual sections around Keswick. It was a real treat to see the snow-capped hills and forests of green trees after working for months on dreary, scorched plains. And oh, the joy of feeling cold and being able to appreciate the warmth of a fire and blankets. It felt strange not having to go to the hospital every day and be responsible for the care of a number of sick people, and it was an unusual treat to go to bed without thinking that she would be sent for during the night. Dr. Brown and Miss Pogson drank in the beauty and freshness of the hills in their walks, which they took twice daily before breakfast and following afternoon tea. Here they garnered the mental images which would provide a background of inspiration for them in the long months that lay ahead on the plains. The vacation was cut short for the doctor when a telegram arrived informing her of the illness of Miss Pogson, who had gone down to Ludhiana 2 weeks earlier to resume her work. So at the end of 5 weeks, Edith Brown turned her back upon the hills and her language study and hastened down to help her friend. Back at the hospital, she found a great fever epidemic, with an average of 5 out of 6 of the population becoming sick and many dying. Her days and part of her nights were filled with the sound of diagnosing fever, checking patients, and dispensing medicines. Fortunately, Miss Pogson recovered, but not in time to help in the period of greatest pressure. So the first year came to an end. For her, it had been a time of adjustment, a time of learning, and a time of vision. In these early months, the seed was already planted that was going to bear amazing fruit in the years to come.